This is Fresh Air. He may not be a football hero, but Jerry Markbright is one of the best-known referees in the NFL. He's written about his 34 years as a football official in his autobiography, Born to Referee. Weekends during the season, millions of TV viewers see him whistle in mouth. Last weekend, Markbright was in New Orleans officiating the Saints-Redskins game. I asked him what he does during the week.
I have a regular job. I have been employed by the 3M company since 1956. I am the trade and barter manager of the advertising services division of 3M company. Now, don't ask me what that is.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to. This is quite a double life, isn't it?
Well, really, I basically use the same skills in both jobs. I'm a negotiator on my job with 3M, and I am constantly negotiating and trying to be right all the time in the officiating field. Both jobs are tough. Officiating's a little bit more fun and exciting.
Mm-hmm. You say, when I announce a call, I'm like a policeman letting you know you're caught.
Well, maybe I over-exaggerated a little bit in the book, but when I make a call, I let the TV audience and the people in the stadium know exactly what's going on. As an example, if a pass interference call has been made against the defense, I step out, I look crisply at the press box, turn my microphone on, and announce with the signal simultaneously, pass interference, number 48, defense, automatic first down. Off goes the microphone, and then I have demonstrated exactly what has happened on the field.
What's the worst challenge you ever got from a coach or a player? A challenge to your call?
Oh, it happens all the time. There isn't a worst one. Every time you make a tough call against a team and, of course, a player, and they feel that it's unjust, they're going to challenge you. And it happens all the time. It happens in every game. There is no worse one. They're all bad.
What happened last week?
Well, we had a situation closing moments of the game when the offensive team false started, simulating the start of the play. The whistle was blown, and a Washington player broke through the line and hit the quarterback. Now, the play hadn't even started. There was no play. It had been negated. And, of course, that's a 15-yard penalty for roughing the quarterback. And the man that roughed him was upset and wanted to know why the penalty flag had been thrown. It was extremely upset, kept following me around until I finally got away from him. And that's the kind of thing that happens. I expect it.
Did you say something to him as he was following you around?
No, I merely tried to explain what I had called, and he didn't want any part of it, so I just stopped talking.
How much of an explanation do you feel like you owe a coach or a player who's challenging you?
Always an explanation if they ask you a legitimate question. It's only fair that you explain. And if they continue on the same course, of course, there's nothing more to say. I say it once, and that's the end of it.
Do you feel threatened by video playbacks?
No, absolutely not. I don't feel threatened by the replays because, to me, replay is a benefit to football. Pro football is the only professional sport that has the guts to have something like instant replay so that an error in ball possession, sideline plays, fumbles, etc., can be corrected if the mistake is made. No other professional sport allows that. I think it's good.
Mm-hmm. How often do you watch playbacks?
We'll look at the game film of the game we officiated a week from that game. We arrive into the city of the next week's game on Saturday, and the film is there waiting. It has been graded by the league office. And then we'll spend 3 or 4 hours on Saturday afternoon reviewing last week's game to see how we officiated. And we can review the entire game in slow motion to see exactly what we did.
Have you ever laid awake at night thinking, I made the wrong call?
Absolutely. I question many things that I do after a game. I'm in thought, deep thought, all week. I had 4 or 5 real tough calls in our game last Sunday. Every time I stop doing what I'm doing, I'm thinking about those calls. I can't wait until I see the film next week to see what happened.
And what if one of those calls, if watching it slowed down, you realize you made the wrong call? What does that mean? What would you do?
Well, first of all, when I get the film, it's already been graded by a supervisory staff in New York.
Right.
And if I made a mistake, then I'm downgraded. You see, officials are rated on all the calls that they make. Every call that you make throughout the whole regular season is given a numerical grade. All of those grades compiled at the end of the season determines your position among the people at your position. I am a referee. There are 16 referees. At the end of the year, my grade computed ranks me from 1 to 16 at my position. The referee that finishes ranked 1 is the Super Bowl referee. The top 9 are the playoff officials, and the bottom 7 don't get anything, so it's very competitive, and every mistake has an effect on your final position. So it's very critical that you be right.
What do you train your eyes on during different kinds of plays? How do you know when you should be watching the ball, when you should be watching individual players?
Well, each official has a specific responsibility on every play, and you must tunnel vision your area and not be distracted by the rest of the action going on. My job as the referee is to watch the snap of the ball, the quarterback, and surrounding blocking and action around that quarterback. That's my primary responsibility. Once he throws the football, it's somebody else's. I don't even watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else has that same tunnel vision type of officiating technique. You just got to concentrate on what you are responsible for. If you start to be a viewer and a fan of the game, you're going to fall on your face.
You were once inadvertently tackled while officiating. Would you tell us about that?
Oh, I've been knocked down and hit and tackled many times, but every once in a while you step in and try to get something done quickly, and somebody thought that I was the ball carrier and tackled me. And, of course, he weighed 300 pounds, and I went down like a ton of bricks and was very lucky to get up off the ground.
Wasn't your striped shirt something of a giveaway?
Well, you know, when you're down low and you see a set of legs run by, I guess they just knock everything down. It's only happened to me once.
Was this a televised game?
Oh, yes. They're all televised.
So what did you do?
I just got up and muttered a few things under my breath and went on to my next play.
Anyone make fun of you?
Oh, they always make fun. The announcers laugh and the crowd laughs, but when a 300-pound player knocks you down, steps on you, stomps on your foot, accidentally bumps you, it hurts, especially when you're 5'9", 180 pounds.
Well, forgetting the pain, it must break your concentration.
No, you just have to go right back to it. You forget about the pain and you go right back. Otherwise, you'll make a mistake on the next play.
The first foul that you called in your role as an NFL official, you didn't get the number of the player?
Well, I was working with the famous Tommy Bell, who was a wonderful man and one of the premier referees of all time in the NFL. Tommy was from Lexington, Kentucky, and he was a stickler for getting the number of the fouler. And as we walked down onto the field for my first regular season game, he had his arm around me. He said, "Look," he said, "in a couple of minutes, you're going to have the first foul of your NFL career. Make sure it's a good foul, and of course, make sure you get the number of the fouler." I said, "Tom, you can count on me. Don't worry." And 2 or 3 minutes into the game, I had a defensive offside. It was a simple call. The two middle players on the defense looked exactly the same. They both had numbers beginning with 6. I couldn't make out whether this fellow was 67 or 68. When the play was over, I raced in to try to determine before Bell saw what was going on. He saw the foul, saw the flag down, killed the clock, looked over at me, said, "What do you have?" I said, "I've got offside defense." He said, "And?" I said, "Tom, it's either 67 or 68. With that, he turned his microphone on. He stepped out, and instead of looking up at the press box like a referee always does, he looked right into my face and announced to the crowd and the TV audience, "He's got offside defense, and he didn't get the number."
Pretty embarrassing.
Well, it was the last time I ever reported a foul without giving the number.
But you genuinely, it's not, you know, you genuinely didn't know which it was. So what were you going to do, make up whether it was 67 or 68?
That's the whole point. You can't make a number up. But you're expected to get the number, and I always get the number now. I just guess I wasn't concentrating enough at the time.
So who ended up with the foul?
Oh, they determined later in the game who it was, but it really isn't that important because when they look at the film, they can see who it is. So it really, it's nothing more than a statistical error.
Are you ever in a position where you have to fudge it because you couldn't see exactly?
Well, if you absolutely can't see it, you just don't report a number. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, the referee will step out and give a call, offside defense, instead of giving the number. And that should tell the people that whoever called the foul just absolutely did not get the number of the fouler.
Well, even though you don't have your whistle with you, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about whistle technique.
Whistle technique is something that I've always considered an art, because anybody can blow a whistle, but it's the way you blow it and when you blow it in certain ways that has a great effect on the field. There are certain situations that require a specific type of whistle blowing. It's hard to describe verbally, but it has a great effect on the field. There are soft whistles, hard whistles, staccato whistles, all indicating different situations and different intensity of whistle blowing.
Do you hold the whistle in your mouth during the length of the game?
Yeah, I carry it in my mouth. And a lot of people don't like that. And every once in a while, someone will criticize me and say, gee, you're always carrying your whistle in your mouth. It's just something I've always done. I feel comfortable. Just before the play starts, I put it in my mouth and it stays there until the play is over.
Well, what's wrong with that? Why would anyone object to that?
I don't know. Maybe it looks funny. Every time there's a picture of me anywhere, it's always with a whistle sticking out of my mouth.
Do your muscles get sore?
Well, at the beginning of the season, the only thing you can't condition is your face, because you can't go out in the park and blow a whistle and get yourself into condition, because if you go out in the park and blow the whistle, the police would come. If you blew it in your neighborhood, someone would think someone was being attacked. So I don't blow the whistle from the last football game until the first one the following year. So my neck and my facial muscles are so sore after that first game that I always forget, gee, my neck is sore. I wonder if I'm getting a cold or a stiff neck. It turns out that it's from blowing the whistle.
Are you one of the few Jewish referees in the NFL?
I'm the only Jewish referee at my position. There are a couple other Jewish fellows that officiate in the league. Howard Slavin is a field judge from California, and Ron Botchin is an umpire from California.
Did you think it was going to be that there'd be any difficulties for you because of that?
No, uh-huh. I've never had any difficulty in any way.
You talk about how there's this kind of ritual among the officials of going to church before a game, and how you weren't really sure if you should go or not.
Well, I had never been in church till I came in the NFL. And, of course, Tommy Bell, who was a Southern Baptist, took me aside our first game and said, we've got three Catholics on this crew, and the crew is going to church on Sunday morning and has done so for years. And everyone goes, whether they're Catholic or not. Are you going to go? And I said, well, if everybody else is going, I'm going to go too. I was a little apprehensive, but this is 14 years later, and I have been in church every Sunday morning for the last 14 years for every football game. And I feel very comfortable there, and it makes the crew closer together. And every time they mention Israel in the Mass, my crew turns to me and nods as if I had talked to the priest prior to the Mass. I feel good about going, and I think that it's something that has become an integral part of my officiating career. In fact, I wouldn't go out and work a football game without being in church first.
Ever take the other guys to a synagogue?
Well, they all want to go, but we can't find one that's open on Sunday morning at 7 o'clock.
When did you decide to be a referee? You'd think most athletes want to grow up and become players. At what point did you want to be a referee?
Well, I wanted to be a player, too. I played all sports. Football was my favorite. I went to college, not on a scholarship. I wasn't a great high school player. I played freshman football at Illinois, and then played varsity ball for a while and just got beat up so bad I realized that I wasn't big enough or strong enough to continue. And I realized that my football career was over and that what would I do for the rest of my life? I loved football so much. Someone said, why don't you try officiating football? And I started working intramural games. And when I graduated, I pursued that aspect of football through my old high school coach, who was a football official, joined a local officials association, and began officiating the B'nai B'rith Touch Football League in 1956. And since then, I've worked every level of football that exists up until and including the National Football League. It's been a wonderful 34 years. It's given me a lot of pleasure.
Has the pay for officials changed a lot in the years that, you've been working?
I started working the B'nai B'rith Touch Football League for $3 a game, and I now get $1,500 a game in the National Football League. Playoffs pay $5,000, and the Super Bowl pays $7,500.
When you're a referee, do you get things like health benefits from the NFL, or do you need to get that from the job that you hold down during the week?
We have workman's compensation insurance, and we are covered from the time we leave home until we get back home and all throughout the football season under workman's comp, and we have a retirement plan. It's a very nice arrangement.
Mm-hmm. But for health insurance, you have to, go to your
own
job. Right.
Yes.
Okay. When you first started officiating, your crew chief said to you that it's a big game and that you should all be outstanding because you don't want anyone to remember you. You must work so expertly that after the game is over, it will seem as if you weren't there. This whole idea of the referees and the officials being so good that they're invisible. Is that still possible with television, really? I mean, aren't you an example of the referee no longer being invisible?
That's correct. That's a very good observation. The other the other men on the crew, the other six officials, are really still able to be anonymous. But the referee has become a media figure of sorts, as minor as it might be. Every time there's a call, it's referee Barth or it's referee Tunney or referee Mark Bright making the call. And so your face is known on television. So, yes, it's hard to be anonymous. In the old days, it wasn't.
Where are you headed next weekend, by the way?
I'm going up to Green Bay, Wisconsin. I've got Dallas at Green Bay.
You think it's going to be a hard game for you?
Every game is hard. They're all tough. They all are very important. They mean everything to the teams that are playing, and that's the way I treat them.
Well, good luck at the game, and thank you very much.
Thank you.